Hello, Lorraine.
I'm addressing you directly. Hi. I'm just coming right out of the gate. Welcome, Lorraine, to the Cubicle Corn Games podcast.
I took a wrong turn. I got on the wrong train. I'm supposed to be on the Pop-Tart cast this week, and I don't know.
I should do that instead. I should just in case, like on the off chance that like the, you know, for the dozen people who might have come across this in the next 10 years and combined with like, I was like, hello, Jonathan. That's right, you. Jonathan Davies in Seacocks, New Jersey.
Just pick a random name from the phone book.
What's it like in the future?
Do people still dance?
That's
is dancing
right.
still like, a thing?
How's America like? Did we make it? Are we still here?
No.
Speaking Russian?
Yeah, maybe. Ooh.
Destiny's that's taught that's me
what,
anything.
That's what that
yes.
Putin vaccine does. Makes you speak Russian.
Yeah.
just... Delicious medicine for you. Definitely not poison. You take, yes.
You take or you get on train.
That's right, yeah. You know.
Where it goes, who knows?
Oh, my God.
Freedom train.
Uh-huh.
Take you away.
Anyway,
I'm not laughing. I'm crying.
Is that a big accent better than the Russian accent?
Probably not, because there's a lot of you can go a lot of right. Like you can really stretch that.
I think because part of it is
Eastern
just
European
the way
like inflection,
that, like like Russian is grammatically just how that flows right. with the English on top of it, like. Because I've read some like comparison posts of like someone who is Russian speaking English is like I don't use, I think it's like there's certain, I don't remember which part of speech they don't use, mm-hmm. but that's what makes it so choppy and most of the time.
Oh, and that's what makes it funnier, like
well, yeah,
to,
right.
to name
paired
English
with
speakers,
the accent,
but, right.
like. Because otherwise, it's just like you get like any of the other romance languages, like your Spanish, your French, Italian, or whatever. Like mm-hmm. it's just slightly different stressed, like. Vowel sounds, like consonants are kind of everywhere, but Russian is so different.
I do think, and this is all right, I'm putting a lot out here, but let's
also
say this.
Who are you?
I'm Dustin. Kyle McGrath is joining us.
Bah.
And Philip McGrath is also here.
Hello. I used to know how to say who is Big Papa in Russian, but I don't remember. Big Papa was a local goose, by the way. A duck, actually. He was a duck.
Oh, anyway. Hey.
Hi.
We did get a Wade.
Surprise.
Wait, we're recording. How's it going?
I am. How are you?
Russian.
Yeah.
Acclimating.
Wade McGrath coming in hot.
Bang.
I apologize for my tardiness.
No, you're good. Phil said you were otherwise indisposed a little. I just figured you were doing something else, but this is fine. I'm glad to have you.
Anyway, Dustin, you were saying something about Russian.
Oh, I was just going to say that, like, I feel like a Russian accent is also, like, in the pantheon of accents, very easy to, like, have fun with because it is less, like, if you, like, if you were to put on... Like, to put on some level of, like, a stereotypical, like, Asian accent speaking English, like, that is way more racially coded than, like, the people in the block of Eastern Europe generally, I feel like, are, like, racially diverse enough that you're not, like, pinning, pinning it on, like, one.
It's because there's so many countries over there that have been, like, shuffled around.
Not that it's, like, you know... nice to ever just like slip into a
mocking version of
someone else's like interpretate like trying to enunciate English or whatever, but like on the scale of where you could land there, like I feel like you could do worse, I suppose.
It is slightly less racist to make fun of Slavic accents than it is to make fun
of, and British is the best one by far. Like I don't know if it's the most fun, but it's definitely the one that like involves the least infliction
trying.
Of suffering, I guess.
That's because,
like,
they inflicted all the suffering.
I mean, it's like, the accents are just like comedy generally, like the, you know, are you punching up or are you punching down? Like, on the world stage, British people have not historically suffered in any meaningful way.
Right, that's usually a punch up.
Except
Slavic
with their
people,
own
that's
hand.
Maybe a punch sideways.
Right, depends on the place, the specific place you're punching and the time period you're punching in.
What scenario?
Time
for the filming of the show Chernobyl, they wanted the accents not to be English, but they also didn't want subtitles, and they didn't want to use Russian accents, So they decided to use British, even though obviously that makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the characters have British accents, even though it's, yeah. It's
yeah, I don't know how that came about. Like, I think, like you said, it's just, like it's exotic enough that it's not, like, American English, right. But it's not, like, right, you know. Exactly. But they know that most Americans will understand, like, they won't need subtitles to even interpret, like, people's pronunciation of certain words or whatever. Because that's all, like, if you're watching, like, World War II films or whatever, either they usually do actual German with subtitles, or they're just like the Nazis just to have British accents for mm-hmm. some reason, because that's the thing that they chose to represent them as.
Different English.
Yeah, but so, you know, there's no like British is the closest I think you get to cruelty free, like, I'm going to put on a silly nationality's voice or whatever.
I don't know. Or
American.
If you're looking for just straight
right.
accents, like, you know.
Yeah. Like, everybody can do, like a California surfer dude. Like, that's fine. Like, totally.
That or, like, Southern or, like, Minnesota / Canadian. You got some American flavors.
Yeah, Canadians,
of English.
They take things in such stride that's like, mm-hmm. oh.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm real sorry. What are they going to do? They're just going to be
it's
like.
It's becoming more normalized in and around Appalachia that making fun of quote unquote rednecks is getting to be offensive.
I mean, it's still never been, you know, nice. Like, yeah, that's another thing that, like, you know, depending on, I don't know. It's just, if you're coming at someone from a mocking tone, it's never a nice thing to kind of just, like, impersonate right. them necessarily, but I've always been like in the the handful of times I've traveled down that corridor, basically from Southeast Michigan down through like Ohio and to Kentucky and back, I love the like the spectrum of accents you get as you pass through there, because like at nebulous parts of Southern Ohio, people definitely start to sound a little different, and it just like the knob gradually goes from like a 3 to like an 8. Like once you get to like the like Central Kentucky, like it's really funny. But it's not a harsh dividing line by any means. Where
it's
like
a grayscale.
No, it's very
yeah.
Gradual.
Don't go south of Columbus ever.
Right, that's when people start to get just like that little bit of twang. Like
Dayton is usually the city that I use. South
and Dayton is definitely like you're in the danger zone at that point. Yeah.
The red zone.
Watch your back.
The red zone.
Oh boy. I remember Preston's brother Nathaniel. This was like.
Yeah.
In his early, like, either right before he went to college or, like, within his, like, first, like, freshman year or whatever, and we would see him at events and stuff, like, card game things. He was super self-conscious about, like, aww. He really wanted to get rid of his aww. Accent, like,
okay.
in college. And he was like, no, I'm done, right? Like, I don't sound like I'm from North Carolina at all. I'm like, dude. First of all, you shouldn't feel like you have to do that. But secondly, like,
right.
you're not doing as good a job as you think you are. But I feel like over the course of a conversation that involved that, I inadvertently like burst his bubble a little bit. Aww. I was like,
strengthened his resolve to keep trying.
Mm.
Sure.
Break his spirit. End the man.
But yeah, then that's funny, like when now that our cousins who have moved down to Kentucky, or I guess my cousins, whenever we see them, like they have noticeable accents now, but they grew up around here, so you know, it took a couple years, but they picked it up. Like you just, you know, you're in it for a while, and you just kind of blend into your environment or whatever.
Monkey see, monkey do.
Something like that. But they've been down there for like 10 years or more.
Say.
Probably more.
As long as I've known them.
Yeah.
So.
Our mom lamented developing a little bit of a Kentucky accent while living there. It wasn't even, it was barely even noticeable, but it really bothered her.
I still say y'all.
I mean, I
that
say
is,
y'all.
That is now a permanent part of my lexicon.
Y'all's fun to say.
I don't even know if that's like a Southern thing anymore. That's just a thing.
It's kind of spread. Definitely.
I do feel like that, like it is as close to like when you're talking about dialects. Is it as close to like when a French word just to like becomes part of English? Like people just understand it to have a meaning just arbitrarily. Yeah. Like, I can't think of a good example of something like that right now. But yeah, I feel like y'all has been is now part of the general like lexicon of words you can neutrally say that is just like shorthand for everyone.
Give you a side eye if you do it.
Mm. That's true for sure.
If you call like a cherry Pepsi a Coke, then you're a monster.
Coke, soda, pop.
What kind of Coke you want? What? You're just deliberately being wrong at that point. I can't.
But on the other hand, it's just like
the line.
Like, you know, you've heard people say things like, "Get me a Kleenex," or like, you know, "Can you Xerox this for me?" And that's exactly the same thing. It just feels so much more wrong when it's Coke for some reason. I don't know why. It is the same exact thing of like taking like a proper noun and using it as the general term for a product.
There are varieties of Kleenex, and one is specifically Kleenex. They're all the same tissues.
Fairness, how many of those restaurants have products that aren't Coke?
I bet it happens.
And how many of those products are there? Probably like two.
I assume...
Is horse Pepsi okay?
Right. Hey. You go to Taco Bell in Georgia, they're going to sell Pepsi products.
But that's like the like one of the only exceptions, probably.
Food
like
in
I would
Georgia, come on.
There's a Taco Bell in Georgia. Taco Bell's not ethnic.
That's the joke.
I can just see, you know, some city meeting or
there's an ordinance that, right,
and someone's not happy.
Not my America.
And bring the wrong kind of crowd.
Right. There's just like an ordinance where the handful of places that sell Pepsi, like, they can vend it, but they can't like utter it aloud.
You can't say the word Pepsi.
I want a Coke. We don't have that. What do you have?
Oh, the
you
other
know
one.
The other, right, the other thing.
It's written on the menu as !! Coke, and they can't actually say Pepsi.
Uh-huh.
That's a marketing department's nightmare.
It's like when they put wings with like a Y and a Z when it's like not real chicken. It's it's just like Coke with the funny C and the K reversed.
This is legally not Coke.
Okay.
It's got just an Coke accent.
An
just
a.
Put the accent over the E. Just call it a day.
In the late 80s, Nintendo was real mad that they were calling every video game system Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're risking losing their copyright on it if it became ubiquitous. Mm.
Yeah.
Phil, I'm going to pick up your high level. That was like a 9 on the Segway scale.
Nailed it.
I had that one queued up, but still queued too.
I'm going to take it and run with it. We have some Nintendo stuff to talk about. When I was Googling, like just like seconds before we got on here, maybe more in the next like couple of weeks, because like the first thing, when I Googled Nintendo Direct, the first thing that came up was like, there'll probably be a new Nintendo Direct this month, like another one.
Oh,
huh. Yeah. I guess there's like some, outward facing part of the Nintendo Direct like database that shows like the archive, or it shows like here's all the old videos that shows that it's been updated, like within the couple weeks before there's a new one.
It hasn't happened yet,
right? Mm. And that happened again like today or yesterday or something. Mm. So they might have other shit to announce in the near future, but
more ways to drain you of your cash.
Their new design or the new marketing policies. Drop information between 1 and 3 weeks before a product releases.
Right.
Yeah.
The most recent one, the most recent one that's actually come out is the Mario 35th anniversary thing.
Yeah.
The most unsurprising reveal in the history of video games.
Yeah,
the
something
we've
like
known
that.
About for like a year.
What is a surprise is that the 3D All-Stars is releasing in like a week.
Yeah, but the specifics about it were news for sure.
I am a little surprised that it's coming out like you said so very soon, because it does unless they announce some other thing that no one's expecting that comes out in like November-ish, like this might be the big thing
on the
platform for the year. So
right, yeah. So Animal far, Crossing. It's the only thing that we have.
Well, I mean, like still to come.
Okay.
It's not already out. Like that.
Right.
Like something, but from between right now and like December 31st, gotcha. Basically. Yeah. I bet Animal Crossing will be Nintendo's biggest seller for the year, regardless of what else comes out for the rest of the year. But
For the year, yeah, definitely.
Mario is already number 2.
I can believe
for Nintendo.
Uh-huh. For Nintendo, yeah.
Yeah, I could believe that for sure.
If they released that Paper Mario game, what else has come out this year?
There's a Pokemon expansion.
Oh yeah. Right.
Maybe the other half of that,
soon,
right, is coming out.
That's not a physical game.
That was not like a new
but
title.
It'll get people to buy the physical game.
Yeah. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Who can say?
But yeah, I have like an article up that I don't have the video in front of me, but I have an article up that has like just some bunch of the stuff that they announced. Anybody can stop me if they remind me of other things they announced. But the first thing, which I still haven't booted up, but I should just go fuck around with it a little. But the thing you can get if you already have Nintendo Online is that they put All-Stars, the SNES game, on there. Like, you can play that right now if you feel like it, which I really like. Like, that was...
Yeah, it's a good game.
That's a good product.
I played the vast majority of my... Of all of those original three games, like Mario Brothers, Mario 2, and Mario 3, in that collection, as opposed to, like, I didn't play many of them on the NES.
I played all of them on the NES.
That was true for us.
Played a lot of Mario 1 at like friends' houses, but
right.
Mario 3 all day long.
We didn't have an NES, so
right. Yeah,
my dad did. We did have
All Stars at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We never got All Stars.
Yeah, the bundle.
We got that cool European version that had Mario World in it.
Right, like it with the single cart.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the bundle we got had them both in there, but they were separate cartridges. Separate. So I think that version did come out here
at one point.
Uh huh.
But I don't think it was as wide released. I think it was a pretty limited time thing, the Mario World one.
Sure. But that's a neat collection. Yeah, those are cool versions of those games. Like, I don't know if they're definitive. Like, I'm sure there are people out there with me that have a stronger opinion than me about like which version of those games you have to play. Yeah. But
I think for the hardcore crowd, they'll go for the originals.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with any of that. I want to say, I don't know this, that they messed with the physics on them.
I don't remember.
Such that people... are upset.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I've never played much of that collection to
because there's
know
like
really for myself.
If you remember, like this is true mostly of Mario 1. Like if you hit a brick, you like float through it weirdly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, the physics gets a little not weird, but definitely different from the original, where
right.
it's pretty hard.
And there's no singular like if you talk about the palette, what
the right way to play Mario?
What are those? Some of those games look like there's no singular because the original game feels. Definitely feels different from, you know, like Mario Maker levels that look like those palettes. And I bet this SNES game feels different than both of those, although I haven't played it in quite a bit.
I could believe that all four of those games, 1, 2, Lost Levels, and 3, have the same engine on that cart.
Right, that they probably feel the same as each other for the most part. That's
in
probably
that
true.
Bubble, because, I mean, the fucking tile sets are exactly the same. I can't imagine they would make different engines. Like, on one cart, that's insane.
Yeah.
For that era, specifically.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's cool that that's out there.
Sure.
I should definitely spin that back up and give it a shot. Fuck around with it a little. Let's see. 3D World's coming out. The
Plus something or other.
The Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury is coming out for the Nintendo Switch. And that's a standalone, like... slightly more HD-ified-er.
Mm.
Like, I think they probably was still just 1080p on the...
Probably. I think
the Wii U supported 1080p and not just 720. I might be wrong about that.
Yeah, sure that's right.
I mean, it was Blu-ray disc, so I'm assuming it would have, right?
Well, no, they were weirder. Like, they might technically be, like, parts of the Blu-ray spec, but they couldn't play, like, Blu-rays.
Well,
like, But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But that game is real cool and super underrated, I think, just because not a ton of people played it, because... a small fraction of the people that usually buy Nintendo consoles had Wii U's, so.
Right.
That's probably my favorite Mario game from that console. I didn't like the new one very much, the new Super Mario Bros. Wii U or whatever.
We'll move on to the other one in a second, but I did pre-order the other 3D collection, and I may or may not get 3D World, although I think 3D World is maybe, like, the more important of the two. Just because, like I said, I think there's a bigger audience of people who probably haven't played that game at all, and I think a lot of people have played those other three games, like, to some extent, at least if they want to. There are a ton of people out there who have played some version of those games before, just because those platforms were so much more ubiquitous. And
Even if you're younger,
I feel like, just based on the number of sell-through those platforms had,
people
might have had,
everyone had
a dad
Wii,
or an
basically.
Older brother or whatever, right, that had a Wii or a N64 or a GameCube lying around that just might have, like... Like, Carolyn, your sister played, you know, Sunshine.
Carolyn loves Sunshine.
Mostly just because you were more interested in video games, like you and Jillian were more interested in video games than she was, but it was there, so it was like,
I'm pretty sure that's her favorite Mario game. I know she really likes, she played a lot of the Galaxy games, too. She played a lot of 3D Land when I got it for her on her 3DS. But, like I said, I've said before, we never owned Super Mario 64, like, back in the day. We just didn't have that cart. I'd played at other friends' house or whatever, and we rented it a handful of times, but like she was never exposed to that. Granted, she was very young when the N64 came out, but that was never like just around in the house. I think that's why she likes Ocarina of Time and like Majora's Mask so much, was because we had those games and she then played them just having fun or whatever. She's got a weird swath of games that she is very fondly attached to because A, we had them, and B, she watched us play them a lot too.
Right.
Yeah, that thing seems neat. And the little, I don't have no idea how extensive that extra little bit of content is, like the Bowser's Fury thing, but you know, some new levels, it looks like.
They didn't really touch on it in the direct, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly what
it was.
There's
like some kind of content upgrade with that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other big like retail product, at least in the discrete game space, is the Super Mario 3D All-Stars Collection, which is the one that has Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, and Mario Galaxy 1 in it.
Yep. Not Mario Galaxy 2.
Right, unfortunately.
I wonder, do you think they maybe... I've seen people be like, oh, they're just going to sell that as a separate game. What if they sell it as like a DLC add-on for the game?
I could believe...
Ever had the audacity to sell DLC to a collection of remakes? And
they
remasters?
Did that with
Didn't they do that with?
I say they did that with Master Chief Collection. Yeah. They piecemealed other did games they? In there over
that
time.
That is true.
Yeah, because okay, they started with I think it was just Halo 1, 2, and 3, and then they added ODST and Reach later.
I'm pretty sure.
Although
that's true.
Interestingly, you could buy just Reach Master Chief Collection without buying the rest of it, and it still functions. So mm-hmm. you could spend the $8 mm-hmm. to get Reach and then just never buy any of the rest, which I think is arguably better than
and, you know,
doing like a standard DLC.
Yeah,
it's theoretically possible that they could do that too, but I could believe any of those things. I could believe I think it's the least likely that they'd release it as like a standalone thing that's unrelated. Like, it's possible, but I doubt it. I could believe that it is like that it's a DLC add-on they add later that either does or does not get released in a similar thing to what we just said about Halo, where like maybe you can buy it separately and like suck it into this other product for like a $2 discount or something. Or I could believe that they'll just never acknowledge that it ever existed and just not talk about it again.
I mean, it was basically like DLC for Galaxy 1 anyway.
Well, it was like a director's cut of levels that, like, my understanding is that a lot of those were like they kind of updated a bunch of levels that were like, here's a bunch of stuff that we got like 80% of the way through and didn't make the cut in the final game, either just because we didn't bother to finish it, or like it just didn't seem like there was a place for it in like the physical spaces that we had already set up for what's going to be in this first game. So I'm that's I believe what most of that collection, like what most of that game ended up being. What there's some cool stuff in there. Like it's good enough to worth.
Better than the first one.
Yeah, I think you could argue that like some of the level design is a little more interesting. Like it's different. It's It's a little Majora's Mask-ish in that, like, the first one is, like, you know, this really cohesive thing that is a little more straightforward, and, like, the follow-up is like, oh, we've kind of hit our stride on, like...
Here's more of that.
Right, here's, like, more of that, but, like, just a little more different than last time.
I didn't know Super Mario Galaxy 2 had a 3-day time cycle.
That's rude.
The moon is crashing into the center of the galaxy.
I mean, if there was a Mario game where you're going to have a moon crash into a thing, it might as well be that one.
Didn't, like...
Mario, Majora's...
Moon.
Hat.
Majora's stash.
Wahoo. All right. That's pretty good.
It's just the Majora's mask with, like, just a mustache on the bottom.
See, they should have done that in Odyssey. Like, if the moon-related thing in that game where he threw his hat into space and then the moon got a mustache and then it crashed into Bowser, killing him instantly.
That's how that level
basically the ending to Portal 1 right there.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
Oh, man. But yeah, I am like... I think that collection is still a little bit of a bummer just because the games in it have not been like significantly updated. Like probably the one that is the biggest change is Sunshine, because that one is full HD now. And I guess technically Galaxy 1 wasn't
all upscale
when it shipped on the Wii. But I do think you could play that game in widescreen. Like it was still like standard def. But I feel
I think so.
I feel like if you had component cables or whatever, you could technically play it in a widescreen format. But, like, so those two games have slight, you know, graphical updates relative to where they were before. But Mario 64, and that's fucking Mario 64, man. That's the same ass game.
Right.
Which that's still the one that I'm most excited to play, just because it's the one I've played least recently. Like, I don't think I've played that game in the last 15 years, maybe longer. It's been a while. But I do wish that, like, there was a world where they might have done, like, a big graphical pass on that thing and just, like...
Yeah, definitely.
Just, like, found a way to...
But the whole thing feels kind of half-baked, lazy. Which is a lot of Nintendo's stuff lately, kind of... And really feel like they're phoning it in.
So I had heard another thing...
phoning it in, but that they're almost exploiting people.
Sure. Yeah,
right.
We know you'll buy this, no matter how little effort we put in, so shut up and give me your wallet.
I was listening to the Waypoint podcast where they were talking about this stuff, and they had said a similar thing to a thing that I had said a couple weeks ago about Nintendo, specifically about this collection, whereas, like, if they had put, like, if this was those three games and, like, a two-hour documentary about just, like, Mario shit, like, I would instantly feel justified. I'm like, yeah, that's worth it to me, just to, like, have something extra, just a little something on top, if it's really a celebration of, like,
big
anniversary in the history of these games.
In the 20th anniversary one that, like, basically just All-Stars on the Wii, like, there was, like, a booklet that came with it that had, like, there was some extra stuff with it, like physically. But I don't think
the game itself was maybe the laziest thing ever.
Right. You could definitely argue that the physical game part of that was even lazier than this, because it was literally just that ROM with nothing else changed about it. You know, the one that they put up for free now for the online service.
Yeah.
It was one of the rarest games on the system.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think they
re-released it towards the end of the life cycle.
Yeah, I do think they reprinted it a little at some point. Like, the initial run was not
cracking, you know, $80,
$90.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got a copy of that somewhere. Got the Kirby one, too.
Hell yeah.
I don't know if that ever got...
I think it's still rare.
Yeah, I should probably be rarer, because they probably never bothered to reprint it.
Right, that came out even later in the life cycle.
Uh-huh.
Kirby always closes down consoles.
Kirby will get the lights.
That's all we've got.
Find your way out the door.
Boyo.
Kirby's a closer.
But yeah, I am excited to play that thing, and I did have to Google around again more to confirm. So that other thing I had said while we were on PSN is slightly different than, like, so apparently you can play Galaxy on a regular controller, but you still might not be able to do, like, they still didn't confirm if you can do all the moves, including the little spin thing, so we might not know about that until, like, regular people have booted it up and played
it.
But they said that you can, and if you played in handheld mode, you can apparently use the touchscreen to do the cursor stuff. You know, whatever.
I assume that you'll just be able to shake your controller up and down, and it'll do that.
Yeah,
I mean, like, the even the pro controllers have some amount of, like...
Right, they have the gyro. They would know if you shook it.
Bang.
But yeah, that's...
That game doesn't function without that spin move.
That's what I'm thinking, right?
You can easily map to a button, but...
No, why would you? Come on.
Nintendo.
Gimmicks, man.
Yeah. Mario Odyssey speedruns are hamstrung by the fact that advanced movement techs have to be done with some light motion controls.
I can't remember reading
that. You can only do with the...
Uh-huh.
Certain the Joy-Con. You can't do it with a pro controller.
Right.
It's disgusting.
It is kind of dumb.
Thanks, Nintendo.
It's funny. It's also, like, the worst... like, those versions of motion controls are still, like, the worst parts, where it's literally just a one-to-one mapping of some amount of waggling to replace a single button press. It's not like the... Like I said, for everything that sucks about that game, like, Skyward Sword bothered to, like the actual angle that you held the thing at and swung it at mattered. Mm-hmm. Like, it took much more advantage of having a motion control interface than just, like, I just swipe and then it just, you know, swings the sword.
Shake
like
for input.
On fucking the Wii version of Twilight Princess or whatever.
Twilight Princess, yep.
Yeah.
Does the thing.
Donkey Kong Country Returns is the worst offender.
But yeah, any of those, like...
That game was ruined by motion.
A motion, right, a shake instead of just a linear button press is not a great look. I don't know. But I am, like, just because it's been so long since I played... especially 64, but a little bit Sunshine too, because I haven't played Sunshine super recently either.
Sunshine's great. I mean, haven't played that in a while.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to
the one I'm most excited to play.
I'm looking forward to play those games. And like I said, Galaxy probably the least, just because I have played it the most recently. But yeah, it's been a really long time.
I don't think I ever beat Galaxy 1 originally. I think I played like half of it.
I know I beat Galaxy 1, but I don't think I did Galaxy 2.
Okay. If I played all of these games,
you monster.
I don't think I finished Galaxy 2, but I beat Galaxy 1 back in the day. But yeah, Galaxy 2 is neat. It's a really cool thing. Like the amount of it I played, and I do remember being impressed by like the levels that they had on display. Like,
I think
it seemed
by the
really
time
good.
I played Galaxy 1, 2 was already out. So like I think I kind of burnt myself out going from 1 immediately into 2, which is kind of like, I don't need more of this right now. And then just never went back to it.
I
don't.
And that's all the big, like, super obvious stuff, like the more traditional, basic, like, game release stuff. The other stuff in here, I'm just going to kind of throw some stuff out and see what you guys think about it, because we also didn't really talk about it at length off the podcast. One of the first ones being Super Mario Brothers 35, the Tetris, Tetris 99 with Mario stuff.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it, but also, like, why is it going away?
So
that's how we work now.
Yeah, I'm really of two minds about it, because on the one hand, like, wouldn't it just be, on some level, it would just be cooler if it just existed in perpetuity. But on the other hand, it's like everything else where, you know, they need to have a concentration of players playing it at any given time for it to be good. So if you say it's going to come out on this date and you have this amount of time to ever play it, like, it'll get people in there to play it. Like, it won't suffer the, like, slow trickle-off death of, like, every game on Steam that has multiplayer. Like, they either launch with no player base, or they launch with a player base and eventually reach zero players over the course of, like, you know, 6 months to a year or two. In that sense, I think it does make, like, some practical sense to just, like, say, hey, all right, it's going to be out for a while, and then we're going to, you know, put it back in the vault or whatever.
I couldn't tell you what the population of people playing Tetris 99 is these days, just because I don't play that often and kind of only pick it up again during like the special event weekends, because that's how they get you. But they did introduce like private like rooms you can make in there, so you could like, oh, I'm going to be playing this today. Here's the code. Everybody come play with me.
So you get some number of
you can have private matches
of individual people. Does it still fill the other slots with bots?
I have no idea. I've never tried it.
Okay,
I'm assuming it does, because there is they will add bots, I think, to like the like grandmaster mode or whatever. The like you've won many. You've won or I think it's either just one or multiple of the regular Tetris Royale.
The chicken dinner playlist?
Yeah. I think that does fill out with bots, because that is, I've never been in a full match of that with people, but then you'll see them like pop in, like eventually the timer will like just tick down. It's like, okay, here's just, we're filling the room out.
Yeah, so I don't know about the, like I said, I think it does make some sense practically, but there is a world where you just like, it would be just cooler if it was just out there in perpetuity, but
yeah. Especially even more so for the actual All-Stars release, because this isn't like an online game that needs regular maintenance and servers and stuff. It's a thing you put out once and it's functionally done at that point.
Kyle, do you know, because that
month later is ridiculous.
Yeah, that I had heard and never followed up to confirm. Do you know if that, does that apply to the, because they did say they're doing a very limited run of the physical release of that 3D All-Stars game.
They said it's digital too.
That's nuts. Like, all right, that's pretty crazy.
They take it off their store and put it into their magic vault.
Yeah, they did.
Just like Destiny.
just like Destiny. Yeah, that's a little, I don't know about that.
Yeah, we'll see if that sticks.
It's not even like a lot of fringe title. It wasn't going to have a lot of,
like, do you think
recognition
that's,
anyway.
Do you think that's just to hedge their bets on, like, they really want to make sure that they sell through that physical allotment or something? So they're
maybe,
like,
it's so weird.
I'm sure.
Yeah, that's really weird.
It's very weird, because, like I said, people are going to buy this. It's going to be a big seller. And you would think, like, other games like this would be, it would have a lot of legs to carry it through the system, because people are going to pick it up. It's like,
sure.
Yeah, it's a Mario collection for whatever. Right.
Yeah, as far as something like that goes, really I have dumb. To assume that has got to just be either, like, right, like a function of, like, we got to make sure we get through all the cartridges we're going to press, or just, like, even just a strict financial, like, all right, Q4 is maybe looking a little soft or whatever. But if we tell people this is the only period in which they can buy this thing, they won't be able to sandbag and be like, all right, I'm just going to buy it next July.
I believe it.
But yeah, that still sucks straight up. Like, there's no...
Gives even more weight to the idea that there won't be a bigger holiday release too.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I honestly don't know.
But yeah, I hope that I don't know. I hope that they at least re-release it again someday.
Like, I would in assume some form they for, will. But
I'm gonna buy 20 copies and then sell them off, on eBay over the next couple years.
Right. Off the top of my head, I certainly can't think of a great practical reason to do that, right. other than there other must be some financial incentive. Why does that work?
Right.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And really weird, but
very strange.
Especially because Nintendo's not hurting.
Right, yeah, they're doing okay, relatively speaking. What else was I gonna say? There's even a bunch of stuff still that, like, and I doubt that they'll talk about this year even, but that that their next step is gonna be very much like an Xbox One X. Like, there'll be like whatever their next physical thing is gonna be, it's gonna be like a Switch Pro. Like, it'll probably just be like another, like a DS Lite, like another thing with
Isn't
a slightly
that what the Switch
different
Lite
form
was?
Factor. Well, that's because that's from the other angle, though. That makes it cheaper. Like, the Switch Lite is a cheaper, more accessible Switch. I think the next one will be the more expensive, like, slightly higher performing Switch. Like, it'll probably just have the next generation of that integrated NVIDIA chip that goes in the, like, whatever the modern version of the Shield is, because the Switch we have now is just that chip from, I think, the first NVIDIA Shield, which was their, like, streaming video slash, like, light gaming TV box or whatever.
Do you think there's a world where they'll make a Switch that only connects to the TV?
I maybe, yeah. I wouldn't put any of that. I wouldn't be surprised if the big version of the Switch is that, or if it's even like somehow weirdly splits the difference between the Switch Lite and that, where like it's the box it ships in only plays in handheld mode, but you can throw them another $100 to get like a better dock that
gross.
I wouldn't begin to presume anything about what their like next iteration of that hardware is, but I bet within the next 2 years there'll be another Switch SKU that is functionally different than the ones that exist right now.
That had been confirmed for next year.
I think last I checked, it was still just heavily rumored that it was going to come out next year.
Yeah, they have never out loud stated that they're doing that. I think there's a ton of like the supporting evidence, like weird patent shit, and maybe even some like, you know,
right. But again, you're going to surprise no one with this announcement.
No.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to make 8 SKUs of this product before its life cycle ends. Everybody knows you're going to do it.
You've done it before.
Do it again.
Bang, bang.
The most recent rumored PS5 price is $600-$500, which that is by no means confirmed, but that was just like,
That feels right.
My uncle who worked at Sony said. But that certainly feels in the realm of possibility based on them still not talking about it.
I can't believe it. Like, so, come on.
Austin, were you on when I talked about the Pringles leak?
No, I don't think so.
Supposedly that there's a Pringles, like, probably some sort of contest tie-in to win the next-gen Xbox.
Uh-huh.
And in the fine details of that contest, it's the cash value is $600.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, that's... yeah, we'll
Thanks,
see.
Thanks, Pringles.
A lot of damn money. How many? All right. So you're saying if I bought what 120 Taco Bell boxes, that like,
right?
What are my odds of winning an Xbox or PlayStation?
It's gonna be a Mountain Dew situation.
It's the way to go. It's how I'm spending my $600.
Okay.
I've never looked into this one as much as other things, but I want to see this. The return on really investing in the Taco Bell boxes isn't too bad.
Right, like you could conceivably, like, if you're really, really cautious about when you submit those codes, you can maybe spend like $300 and get an Xbox or whatever. I'd believe it. That's great. Oh, that's so good.
Marketing contests like that are kind of a dying art. Like, remember when you would go to Taco Bell and there'd be like game pieces on it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Take the piece off, and it's like, oh, look, I want a free burrito.
Mm-hmm.
Man, did you guys watch that McDonald's Monopoly documentary that HBO put out?
No, interesting.
It's wild. I highly recommend it.
I already knew all that stuff before.
Right, I know a lot about it, but I still want to check it out.
Yeah, it's really well produced, and the testimonials they have from some of the FBI people are just hysterical. The one agent is just... He's a riot. He's really funny because he was super young during it. Like, he was maybe his first big thing, and he's just hysterical to listen to.
Yeah, I think I have a special fondness for like the early mid-90s when Monopoly game came out, and then all the other restaurants were like, oh, we gotta do games on our fast food contest. This is great. Every time you go to the store, you get to play a little game and win a little thing. They don't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Wonder why.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, on one level, it became an online thing where you're putting your code online, give us your email address.
Text and us. Send you
free fried.
Yeah. Great, because that's the thing about the internet is you get both ways, right? Like, you both get higher levels of actual sales if they still require purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And or, you know, you get metadata about people's whatever. Right down to metadata about their other, like, web browsing habits if you're just, like, installing a cookie on their browser that tracks everything that they do. Just like, oh, you like McDonald's and Chipotle. Well, what if you ate more of one of those than the other, you fat fucker?
That's why the current era of fast food contests just don't really do it for me.
Where's the thrill? The pageantry?
The tactile sensation of crossing, you know, scratching off one of three spaces on a game piece and knowing I guessed right and I win the little prize.
Mm-hmm.
Ganbate!
Scratching stuff off is fun, though. Like, even at least there, it's like separate from like just buying a lotto ticket. Just like, all right, I guess I got this cheeseburger, and then also I get to play this little game.
Like, it's added value, or it's, if you're buying scratchers, you're just wasting your money.
Uh huh. Man, oh man, everything's weird. I guess some things used to be weirder. Like, the concept of that Monopoly game was pretty strange at the time.
But... Oh yeah.
Oh.
The way it played out.
Right. Yeah. Uh huh. It's not like it got any less weird when it came out that it was all like a fixed scam, weird cabal of crazy people in Florida. Which is, ain't that always the way?
Sometimes it'd be like that.
Anyway, back to Mario things. nothing strange in that world. You eat mushrooms, you get big. Everything's, you know, just like
sometimes
real life.
Sometimes, like, you eat mushrooms, small. You die.
That is just like real life.
It's true.
It's got to pick the right mushrooms or, you know, have the wrong allergies, I guess. other weird physical products. One of them is a Mario Kart that you play on, like, the floor of your home.
Yeah. Ario Kart.
Ario Kart. That's pretty good.
Oh, a weird product that I'm not sure who its intended audience is.
I mean, it's 10-year... It's, like, households with 10-year-olds and, like, either a huge patio or, like, a kitchen with, like, a perfectly situated island in it. Or... but, yeah, Mario Kart Live Home Circuit is an... They are RC cars that connect to an app on your Switch that displays, like, a live camera feed from the little go-kart car and, like, paints game stuff on it. Like, it paints, like, a 3D rendering of the cart over the plastic toy part of the cart that you could see, like, through the camera. And it's just like, oh, there's a banana peel that exists on your screen but doesn't exist in the world. And you run them over and the car stops physically in real space, which is, like, that's funny. Like, that's amusing. Like, if I were between, like, 8 and 12 years old and had, like, the space to set that thing up in, I feel like I'd be way into that.
Right, but it's also the kind of thing that you'd have a hard time convincing your parents to get, because the sticker price is, what, like, $120?
I think it's $100 for
your house.
I think it's $100 for one cart.
Just for one.
So you can't even play, you can't, like, play with, like, a sibling or something unless they buy down another $100 for the other one. And yeah, right, the space thing is, like, you have to have a relatively sizable contiguous space that, you know, that can support driving your little, like, I wonder if that thing can even run properly on carpet or if it would have to be, like...
Yeah, I don't know.
Right, yeah.
They showed a nice hardwood floor in a house that, like,
nobody
owns.
Right, yeah, exactly. One of those beautiful spaces that, like, you know... They should have done it at a garden party on the rooftop. Of, like, everybody's got their carts out and we're gonna, like, jump them across these two apartment buildings.
There were Switch commercials in that exact setting.
Yeah.
Oh, Nintendo. but yeah, that's another thing where it looks like theoretically cool, but I'm not sure how deep the market is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like VR at some point where like you have to both have the money to want to buy the thing and have to have enough space to set the thing up and like use it. So you're self-selecting a lot of people out based on those two criteria alone.
Not everyone has a rooftop terrace to do all their switching.
And then kind of from the other end of the spectrum, which I think my thoughts have evolved on this slightly, but they're releasing a Game & Watch that plays Super Mario Brothers.
First Game & Watch in however long, and it's literally not even Game & Watch.
I know.
It does have one, like, Game & Watch game. Like, so it has a clock.
Well, it's got balls.
Thank
like
God.
A Game & Watch would have.
Thank
and
God.
Right, it's got that weird juggling one.
A thing a Game & Watch did.
I know.
That's a watch part.
Which, like, so when I first saw this, I was like, who in the world, other than, like, maybe some amount of Japanese people, has, like, active nostalgia for the Game & Watch?
People in their late 30s, early 40s.
It's just a thing maybe. That, like, I couldn't tell you how wide a release those things got outside of Japan. Like, I know they had some footprint in the West, but certainly couldn't have been a very big one.
A lot of them here.
When I go to retro game shops, you know, you see an infinite number of NES cartridges, like, pretty much all the, like, those, like, proper generations are represented. I've maybe seen a Game & Watch, like, twice in my 30-some-odd years of being in places where people sell old video games in America.
They fell more into the category of, like, Tiger Electronic games.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Nobody really wants them anymore.
Uh-huh. No one's shipping, like, a Madden retro thing that is just, like, one of those Tiger Electronic footballs, but but has John Madden's face on it.
Stop selling when you've already made the sale, Dustin.
So, yeah, that was my initial reaction. I was like, I wonder how deep the benches of people who want this exact thing. But then the other thing I had thought is, well, on the off chance that this thing is as easy to, like, mod and fuck with as, like, the NES Classic or whatever, it would be kind of neat to have just, like, an NES that plays every NES game that is, like, that you have to do very little work to set up.
Sort of like a Game Boy Micro. Almost.
Right. So that's, like, a big if, but,
I, like, keep an eye on that, because originally I saw that and I'm like, oh, that's cool, and I was asking myself, like, what would I pay for it? And it came about $10-$15. I would pay for that thing for Mario in a pocket and a couple pointless extra features.
Right.
And then the MSRP is out like $50.
I think it's $49.99.
That's not gonna be for me.
Which I don't think is too much necessarily for the hardware.
Yeah.
But it's like way too much for a thing that ships by default with one video game from the Nintendo on it and then like a clock.
But ball, Dustin.
Someday I want them to go a whole ham. They couldn't put like the entire catalog on there for obvious reasons, but
they have to sell it to you otherwise.
Games on something like that, all of them.
Sure. Or even if this thing had been like, it still would have been like steep versus like content versus cost, but if this had had that All-Stars game on it instead of just Mario 1,
that's what, like, I thought it something. Was at first, and then it was just like, no, it's Mario 1. I'm like, why? Who wants just Mario 1?
Played it a million times.
And then they went and they're selling it to you in a well, they're not actually selling Mario 1 this time, but just the fact that it popped up again later, and it's like, you could do, you could give us even more money for this kind of dumb thing, or just get it for free with the money you're already spending on us.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you haven't played Mario 1 yet, if you don't own it, like, this is going to be the thing that, like,
this is
going to
turn me. This
I
is it.
Get Mario Brothers.
Yeah, so that's like
it.
The big
it's
question
gonna,
for
this
me
is the
like,
conversion.
Like, I don't think this product is for me, but I wonder how many people it is for. Because even like like I said, for the cost of admission relative to the amount of games that were on there, like, I was fine playing, like, MSRP for, like, the NES Classic just because it looks like a tiny Nintendo and it has enough games that, like, I'll play this for, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours total, which is probably close to about, like, how much I played to the NES one, and, like, definitely a little more of that on the SNES one on average. But, like, I feel like I got my value out of those purchases, and I can still, at any time, if I feel unlazy enough, you know, bust those things open and fill them with a bunch more ROMs or whatever.
I mean, it's also like 20 games, though, isn't it? 22 or something like that.
It was it was 20, I think, on each. It might have been a slightly different one.
NES had maybe 0.5.
Yeah, but certainly more than one.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
20 times almost.
And yeah, this thing cost, I think the NES one was like $60, right?
Yeah, it was like 60 or 70, wasn't it?
Came with two controllers and like,
yeah.
Come on, man. Come on, man.
But this one has a clock, Dustin. Game & Clock.
Game & Clock.
Game & Clock.
Nintendo is shameless about stealing your money.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know.
It keeps working is the problem.
Right. I think I'm personally probably out on the Game & Watch thing. If I were to buy one, it would definitely be just because like somebody figured out how to hack it in like the first week or whatever. Just like, oh, it's just
the problem is by the time they figure that out, it will have been sold out for months.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. But you know, then at that point, I think I'll be fine with that. Somehow, I think I'll survive.
Yeah, I'll live.
I'll lose so much sleep. I'll never rest again.
But yeah, so like as far as Mario 1, that's a game like
who cares?
I kind of don't ever need to play like the base version of Mario 1, Brothers 1 again. Like I feel the same way about that as I do The Legend of Zelda, like the original Legend of Zelda on the NES. Like this game is important, but do I practically want to play it a ton in like any point in my life from here on outward? Like probably not.
No.
Other than that, that was pretty much it. There was like a couple like side things. Like there's a Splatoon themed Splatfest of like vote for Mario power ups or something.
It's
I don't
like
remember.
Stars and mushrooms, I think.
Yeah.
All kinds of new physical merch. Ironically, they said at the New York store almost exclusively, but I think it is also coming to their online store, which has been growing recently.
Not everyone can go to New York to buy things.
There's the themed, this says Ninji speedrun course in November in Super Mario Maker 2, which actually I should boot up that game again and fuck with it a little more. Like we've kind of talked about like the interface.
Declared our stance.
The interface on the Switch isn't quite as good as it was on the Wii U, but that game is still cool. Like Mario Maker 2
in concept.
Is neat.
The whole like and making world the, thing is pretty neat.
Yeah, they've added the Mario 2 stuff at this point, haven't they? Or
No.
Did they not? I felt like I read that at some point. Did I make that up? Was that
probably
never true? Was it just people saying that they might do that?
I think so.
Okay.
Right. It's not in the game.
Dustin, it was a fever dream.
Okay, that's fair. I think I just wanted it to be true based on how insistent people were that they could
Mario's
do it.
Mario's last heist.
I guess there's always that I could still go play the All-Stars version on Switch or whatever. Regular Mario 2.
Thank goodness.
But yeah, that was about it for the Mario stuff. But like,
wahoo!
Overall, I'm glad that those other 3D games are coming back. Like all four of them, the collection and the 3D world.
I think I had mentioned this to you after we watched the thing, but I saw a tweet that's like, this just goes to show that you can in fact emulate N64, GameCube, and Wii on the Switch.
Sure.
So like, come on, let's go.
And that's the kind of thing where you wonder. And they'll never tell you until those other games are out. But you wonder if they do have like a stable emulator that runs all or the vast majority of those games on the Switch without a hitch, or if they had to do any higher level shit on there to get that stuff to run
well. One of my favorite stories about the like Nintendo ambassador shit, like the reason there were no Game Boy Advance games on the normal 3DS was because they had to like horribly patch together a ROM that like doesn't quite work with the system, but they figured it out with the new 3DS or whatever so that you could buy them on there. But like you boot up one of those Game Boy Advance games on the 3DS and you have to like almost hard shut down the system to close it because it just wasn't compatible. But they're like, we're doing this, so like you guys get these for free and never ask about them again. And that's what happened.
Yeah,
my 3DS special.
I wonder. So yeah, I think that'll probably just be dictated by like you said, if in the next 6 to 12 months a bunch of N64 games show up on the Switch.
I mean, maybe they'll start like pushing like that the like digital catalog, like how they have the NES and SNES. The next one theoretically is the N64.
Right. And they could again from a like purchase-based perspective, they can do whatever they want. They could just plop N64 on there with those other two platforms as just like a free add-on for online subscribers. They could sell those games piecemeal on the eShop if they want. They could fucking...
The only reason I'm a little more hesitant to believe they'd do that, at least right up front, is because there really isn't a virtual console presence on there as much. Like, it's different stuff. Like, there's, like, all that pinball and the arcade stuff, which is different. Mm-hmm. It's not Nintendo games. They're, like, TurboGrafx or just straight up, like, arcade emulated titles on there, as opposed to like, oh, this is the Nintendo version of Street Fighter 2 or whatever. I don't even know if that's a thing on there. Whereas their stuff is exclusively behind their service paywall. So I could see that as maybe slightly more incentive for them to keep it that way, to be like, oh, you you need to get this service because then you can get all these games.
Yeah,
they still might do. The last thing I was going to say is that they might do a, they might pull a Mulan on Disney Plus and be like, all right, if you want the N64 stuff, that's going to be another, you know, $10 or $20 a year.
I could see that before selling them piecemeal, honestly.
But yeah, who knows? I guess we'll find out at some point.
Premium Nintendo Online. Still no voice chat on the console, but you can play N64 games.
Yeah, but yeah, I would say like the physical product stuff is like maybe interesting, but not for me. Like, I think the Mario Kart thing is actually way cleverer, but I'm still like, I don't have the space to play that thing and do not want to put down $100 to try it.
Mario Kart is fine in short spurts. I don't need to be physically chained to Mario Kart.
Well, the funny thing, I will say, the last thing about that in particular is, like, then the footage they showed of that, it works exactly like the, like, to make the track, it works exactly like when you set up the HTC Vive or whatever, where you take, like, the controller
and
you, like, trace
the
around the space where you can play it in VR. For the Mario Kart thing, it's like, drive your cart in a circle. Like, drive your cart in a circuit, and then that's what the track is.
There's,
after
like,
you
four
do a lap.
Physical, like, pylons that you put up, essentially. They're, like, gates. And you, like, you make the circuit through those, so
you
could do, like,
one,
oh, you
and
could
then make it back to the first one.
You could, like, just loop around and then come over here and add some, which is neat. Like, it's neat, but also,
it's cool.
Like, eh. Who missed has the time?
Everybody. We all have the time.
And then those other like, 3D games, I think, are, like, I'd rather have them released than not release them, but I think they're both a little underwhelming for one reason or another, like.
Yeah.
Especially for Mario 64, like, when will we ever get a proper remaster of that game at this point?
And I mean,
Mario 64 DS.
I'm guessing this answer is right, is never. I think Mario 64 DS is the one that we had.
45th,
because you'd think if they were ever going to bother to do something more with it, it would be in, like, something like this, or even just like a standalone product, which I guess, like, maybe they do that. Maybe in another 10 years, they'll be like, all right.
Or 5. 40 is a big number.
Yeah, sure.
Was 30 Mario Maker? I was trying to remember what happened. I remember the 20th or 25th or whatever was that Wii collection.
It probably was.
Was
just
30
Mario Maker?
Like,
yeah. Or was, like, what was the year of Luigi? Was that also a big
know.
Mario
I'm
year?
Bring that up too.
It was before that year because Fear of Luigi happened in Mario Maker. That was a reference to that. To Boo Townhouse.
But yeah, right, like with the 3D All-Stars, I do wish they had done a little more work
something.
On, especially on Mario 64.
Yeah.
And with 3D World, I do, again, like, based on their other releases of Wii U games, I'm not surprised that it's just another $60 thing, but man, would that feel like a bargain at, like, $40 or $30? Like,
yeah.
That would feel like a really good deal at, like, a
$60 on all these games I bought just a couple years ago. I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you put it at $35, $40, like, maybe.
Yeah, which, like I said, the thing that game's got going for it that the collection doesn't is that that game will be a fresh purchase for a lot of people.
Right.
So, like, if you've never played it,
I both tolerate and am upset by the price point on all these remakes. And for the people that never played it, I get it. Like, full price for this game they never played. But for the people that supported you during the Wii U era, they get kind of screwed over.
Uh-huh.
I wish, because I know there's some way for them to be able to track prior purchases, like if you use the Club Nintendo stuff in some way. I wish there was a way that you could get, like, grandfathered deals that way.
I mean,
way.
I'm sure they could if,
like,
they wanted to.
Yeah,
it's
no,
just like
I'm
they,
sure that
they know
metadata,
that people will just pay it. So
I hate it. It makes me so mad. Because they actually did do that with the Wii U, if you remember. Like, if you had your digital purchases from the Wii, you could transfer them up and buy them again.
In that case, if they could even just look at the same console, even though it was partitioned off on the side, but
there's like, I'm sure that infrastructure's there, but they're never going to use it because why would they?
Even the public demand and put Pikmin 3 back on the Wii U eShop.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up earlier too.
Oh man, yep. I know there was a huge kerfuffle about that. People were mad.
They looked real bad.
I mean, right, it was like, it's a bad look because it was a pretty uncool thing to do.
And, like, if you look at it that kind of rationally, who was gonna buy that Pikmin 3, but wouldn't, like, the remake,
right,
and not buy the original
on the Wii U eShop because
sure.
they had the opportunity up until just now and didn't.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's
that subset of people is extraordinary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also, like, the people who are going to buy the remake maybe don't have a Wii U to begin with because they never, so they didn't have the chance
right,
to play
same
it.
Same deal.
So,
yeah,
like,
again.
You're not hurting anyone by using it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Maybe they're just going to be mad when people realize that the Switch version is going to be inferior for, like, some of those reasons we had talked about before, like the
right.
how integral the gamepad was to it. And
I expect it'll be well-polished and functional.
Eh, we'll see.
Lorraine's reserving
hard
judgment.
Doubt if they can do that they can fix Star Fox Zero. I'm still on that train.
They could, but they won't.
They're
so
not going to
and
I'm
going to
be mad. But until they figure out how to display both on the TV and the gamepad, if they're going to re-release every Wii U game, fucking fix Star Fox Zero. You I mean, cowards.
You could, mm-hmm. you could take that half of Star Fox Zero, cut it out entirely, and have a better game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
But the sales on even Star Fox 64 were so low, or Star Fox Zero. Like, I'm not saying it won't happen, but I'd be surprised if they remake that one.
They should
point.
Just do it.
Even though that's
be better.
Maybe like the only major first party title left that
yeah.
hasn't been remade.
Yeah, because they hate me. They specifically hate me. And
no, they hated that game.
Yeah, because they shat it out.
Lorraine, do you think that Star Fox game will come out on Switch first, or do you think that Nintendo will like pick up the phone and call like Platinum and be like, "All right, we got to do Wonderful 101 HD Plus Remix."
That did get remade.
I was gonna say that did. I'm
Is it on
sure.
the Switch?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it's even out already.
All right, well, then.
I'm pretty sure that was a thing that happened.
Question answered. My joke is just real. Lorraine's looking it up right now.
They actually had a Kickstarter support for it, so
that's fun.
People put their money down to get this physical release.
I kind
of
liked that game, but not enough to like, not enough to kickstart an updated version
on
of
Amazon.
That, I don't think. All
Same.
Right, there you go.
That's I own it and much. Never played it.
Yeah.
Funny. There you go. It exists.
Release date May 19th, 2020.
I bet that'll be a short printed physical, yeah, like I bet the copies of that thing.
Pretty sure the original
sure.
was too.
Yeah.
Woo.
Funny. All right. Well,
that's sort of a weird thing in the realm of video game collecting is that there's so many very limited releases now. Like,
mm-hmm.
I want to say one of the rarest game or Wii U games is Axiom Verge got a physical release.
Sure.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. That's just a couple of thousands.
Right.
Yeah.
Did that Daemon X Machina game even get a physical release? Like, that's probably going to be hard
yeah,
to come
that,
by. At some
that
point.
Came out.
I mean, it's out.
Did it get
but,
a physical
but, right,
release?
Did it come out on cartridges?
Question.
I bet it did.
Probably.
Yeah, I bet it did.
Yeah, that stuff's funny.
Remake Star Fox Zero, you cowards.
Make a new Star Fox.
I mean, yes, but they're not going to.
Maybe in 7 or 8 years.
I could be dead by then.
Well, they're theoretically releasing a new Metroid game, so.
Yeah, right.
Someday.
Back off from that one day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that. What if they released all of Prime updated on the Switch?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That'd be pretty low ball.
That'd be real cool.
That rumored before. It's a lot more likely that they'll just release a bundle that has the 3 Prime games with no upgrades and then charge you $60.
Well, yeah, no, it's going to be that, but it could probably be at least I bet it would get cleaned up at least a little
right,
bit.
They do exactly
Mario
what they did
ones.
For Sunshine,
yeah.
right? Like, they'll be able to put those games in like proper widescreen HD.
Like, that'd be
presumably.
Nice. Like,
they released them for the Wii.
Yeah, I have that thing. I have the Metroid Prime trilogy from. From on the Wii.
Right.
Oh.
I'm saying it's a low, slow ball. Like, if they ever get around to actually finishing 4 and don't scrap it for like an 80th time, like, oh, hey, look, for 5 months you can buy all of Prime on your Switch.
The 3 weeks of Metroid.
Wow.
3 weeks of Metroid.
Every day is Metroid Appreciation Day at your local Junets.
Samus wants you to make this purchase within a fortnight. But
no,
not Fortnite.
Not Fortnite.
And definitely not on iPhones.
No.
So stop asking. Oh, man.
What a world.
Yeah, we'll see. But I'm going to keep an eye out. If that other thing drops, like if they do another Direct, we'll obviously have to talk about whatever's in there. If that does end up coming to pass this month. But you've got to think, like, and again, who knows, maybe one or both of those platforms could get delayed, but like they've got to tell you for realsies with no equivocation how much those things cost by the end of this month, right?
Come on.
Like, it cannot be, like, 2 weeks from November, and they're like, all right, now, here's how much it is.
$700.
Money, please.
Well, that's the weird thing about it. Like, those prices are set in stone at this point. They're just not releasing them.
Yeah. They're playing chicken with maybe themselves, but mostly just the world at this point.
Somebody at Xbox, Microsoft, used to call somebody Sony PlayStation and like, all right, what are we doing here? Let's figure this out.
I still could believe that they might be doing some weird, like the thing that they could maybe change is, how much stuff that they put into the bundle for $500 or $600. Like, if it's like, all right, you get 2 years of PS Plus if you buy this thing within this window, or like on Microsoft's end, it'll be like, you know, one or more years of Xbox Game Pass for just if you get in the door, like that's the. I think it'll be value adds and like.
Yeah, they
can do the thing they're contemplating is like they're trying to shore up a plan to like to roll that out either when they announce the price directly or like in response to people going nuts about how expensive they are. To be like, oh. But who knows? Mm.
Oh.
No one. That's right.
New.
But yeah, I think that's about it for like the Mario Nintendo stuff. And then if you guys have anything else to throw out there just in general, I'd be like happy to hear if there's anything else anybody's playing or watching that they just have some thoughts on, and if not, we'll just call it a show.
I think it's ridiculous that Nintendo is re-releasing three games mostly unchanged for $60 when there are products like that Spyro game, which was an HD remaster with like completely redone.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Like, and
the Crash one.
I was gonna say the Crash thing that Lorraine just mentioned. The Crash Bandicoot Collection was, and those are games that I played those games at the time. I don't care enough about Crash Bandicoot personally to like give a shit about that. But for people who did, like, I feel like Brian was kind of into that.
Uh-huh.
Those are good solid updates to really old games. Like, it is a damn shame that they couldn't be bothered to do the same thing for a game important as Mario 64.
I think those collections might have even been less than like standard. I don't think they were 60. I think they were maybe 50 or 40 or something like that.
Yeah, I could believe that. I feel like they were
at least a little bit cheaper.
They weren't 60.
Yeah, yeah, I was gonna say
they're 30, 40.
Yeah, that's a damn shame. It really is.
Because those were smaller studios, like, comparatively. Like, Nintendo is a monolith compared to what, like, who even
I'm not
makes
even
those
sure who developed
now.
The, like, because you know, Activision ended up with the Crash rights, but I don't know who they got to, like, actually make that product.
But,
yeah, that
like,
was
all the manpower that Nintendo has, and the presumably, like, the obviously outward facing, like, the coasting they've done this year, and they couldn't do anything.
Well, you
at
know,
all.
Yeah, it's
they haven't learned their lesson because no one's making them learn.
That's exactly it. But like, also like, if you think about it, like people would get really pissed if they changed some of those games, especially 64. Like, just the nostalgia for it alone, like they'd have people with pitchforks at their door. I'm not saying that that's a good reason to not do it, but like, damned if they do, damned if they don't. But it's really lazy and super shitty, and I'm upset.
Oh, the other thing about that stuff is, like, you want to talk about other remakes and stuff like that. We mentioned the Master Chief Collection. That game has the... And I don't know that the Switch could support this necessarily based on, like, its hardware or whatever, but that game, you can switch the rendering in real time.
It's so funny. I fucking love it.
You can push
it's
you can push
so
the button
stupid.
And be like, or it looks like old Halo, or, like, now it looks like much better or newer Halo.
Look at this chalky
texture.
And
it works pretty seamlessly.
It just works.
Mario Maker.
So, like, I don't know if there's a world that you could do that in, like, in real time like it does there, but certainly they could just throw the ROM... Like, if they had bothered to rebuild that game, they could put it on a disc and then throw the ROM of the old one in there so you can just boot either one if you felt like it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah,
it sucks. It's straight up. It's not what I was hoping for when it was rumored that they were going to put Mario 64 out on the Switch.
Right. My entire train of thought was, a remake. Well,
yeah.
I hope it's
never.
HD and glorious. Oh, it's not. Well, at least maybe it'll be cheap.
I wonder if some of that, the reason for no remaster, partially it could just be like, it's Mario, like you don't touch Mario or whatever. But I wonder if there's some correlation between how the Zelda and Star Fox remakes on the 3DS did compared to,
I don't know,
like
maybe.
Effort on their end, overhead versus sales. Yeah, like if that was just a lesser incentive for them to actually do it.
There's no doubt if they did the cost in investment analysis, like this is the cheapest, most
cost-efficient
way to make a bunch of money.
Our customers are morons who will buy it no matter what. Exactly. That was the conversation.
That's why they don't make more Metroid games. They're expensive and people don't buy enough of them.
People don't buy them.
The right? baby.
It's much.
New Mario Brothers, though. Oh boy.
I was about to say their highest profit margin video games are the ones that are kind of forgettable and uninspired, but sell a bazillion copies, like New Mario Bros. Which, you know, I'm glad that product exists, I guess. But
yeah. It's not terrible, but it's not interesting. Like you said, it's forgettable. Right. It's bland. It's just boring.
Yeah.
Uninspired. You don't make fond memories.
How I feel about the most recent Pokemon games.
Yes.
Sensing a theme.
But those are also sold really, really, really well. So.
Mm-hmm.
I bought them. I didn't buy the DLCs. I'm not going to.
Yeah, but that ship has definitely sailed for me. I'm not. I'm fully divorced from Sword and Shield at this point.
That's sad. I find that sad.
No, it is very sad. I'm sad about it. Like, I'm sad that I can't get the same amount of enjoyment out of a series that has always been so close to my heart. Like, since its inception, essentially, or at least introduction in, like, our country or whatever. I was a kid in the 90s. Like, Pokemon hype was fucking real. And now it's just like, oh, it's another one. Cool.
It's exactly the same as the ones before.
Yeah.
All of them. Forever.
On some level, yes. But, like,
that's why I like Let's Go.
It's like a porcelain doll in a glass case.
Porcelain Pikachu in a glass case. Don't touch the rat.
All right, we've had like some versions of this conversation before too, but like maybe this is the thought that
I have no thoughts.
I'll try to,
and I'm a scream.
Kind of close us out on. Do you think that the reason you have bounced off this Pokemon game? Do you think you can properly quantify it in the same way that, like I said, I think I'm pretty sure the reason that I've had diminishing returns for most of those modern Fire Emblem games is that they're just a higher level of complexity relative to gameplay, relative to like the parts of the gameplay that I'm most invested in. Like if I play those Fire Emblem Game Boy games, like the amount of times I'll have little sprites smooshing against each other on a map is like 90% of my time playing that game. And in the modern Fire Emblem games, the amount of times that I'll have 3D models smooshing against each other on those maps is probably like 60% of my time that I'll spend playing that game.
I don't even think it's that with three houses.
I mean, I don't
with three houses for sure.
Oh. But regardless of whatever the specific number is, it's significantly less than the part where you're playing the tactics game.
I mean, that's probably part of it. I could definitely see, like, I can't necessarily pinpoint, like how you say, like, the combat in Fire Emblem. I can't necessarily lock down exactly what it is about Pokemon that is my favorite part, because I like just exploring regions. I like seeing and raising new teams. I like kind of experiencing what a new place has to offer. I like optimizing, all that jazz. Like,
do you know what everything you just said is? It's not gyms and the plot.
Exactly.
And the Elite Four.
They've been adding.
I'm with you.
They've been adding a lot of superfluousness to it, building side characters, making side quests, building up these big stories that are just like MacGuffin comes, catch it. Okay, we're good. We're done here. Let's move on. Like,
that's what they got at the end of the day for basically every single macro level decision they made about the Pokemon universe, starting with Gold and Silver, because they wanted Pokemon to have some metaphysical relationship to like how the universe functions, which that's not a ladder that you can climb forever. That's a ladder that has a very finite ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. Like the original Pokemon were just animals, and now they're like gods.
Yeah.
Even the legendary Pokemons were like sort of representative of elements or human experimentation or, you know, what have you, but they weren't anything past that.
I mean, I would say that Gold and Silver kind of skirted that line at least a little bit, because they're like, oh, these guys are like protective deities. Like, those are things that happen. Like, it's like...
They're sort of godlike.
Yeah, they're just really strong. Like,
loosely based in ancient religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, like, I should link, there's a video that I watched about, like, a really in-depth review around Ruby and Sapphire and how its plot is actually... It's not as like petty as it kind of seems. It was actually really interesting and had to deal with like a real life like damming situation in Japan, like in the islands where like Hoenn is based off of. That was kind of happening at the time.
Felt like it was so close to being really cool, and then they just sort of shanked it.
That was basically the feel of that video. Like, there is a like meta-ness to it that obviously non-Japanese audiences might not get just because they don't know the context from which like it was being pulled from, because it was a very real and is still a like very divisive issue at the time.
The context like, that they had was relatively well translated, because like environmentalism as a general theme was a big deal at the time.
Correct. And so I thought, like, I feel like that level pushes up against that, and then the glory that is Gen 4 just like jumped the shark and made it like set us on the trajectory we're on now.
Sure.
Like, and it Black and White kind of reined it in a little bit by excluding other generations from that bubble, and I still think that like that was their weirdest and like kind of most experimental like take they have done on a mainline Pokemon game. And since then, like, X and Y just got kind of right back on that train, and it's speeding up from there.
And some of those games, I think, more than others, have suffered from, like, I don't think Sword and Shield has as many, like, I think it has all the problems you guys have described, but I don't think it has as many, like, base core systemic problems as, like, the Platinum generation, Diamond and Pearl. And,
Gen 4.
Gen 7 did, where just, like, these environments are not good.
Yeah,
like I don't think Sword and Shield necessarily has that, but it definitely still has the other thing that you guys have all described in detail.
I mean, it's a nice looking Pokemon game. Like, it's good to look at, but
that's it.
That can only get you so far.
Yeah,
I had to make myself finish that game, which depresses me. I have not finished Ultra Sun because why the fuck would I? I bought that game on sale. I don't do that with Pokemon games. I haven't forced myself to finish a game since Platinum, and I still kind of can't believe I did that. Because I really didn't like Gen 4 at the time. Like, I was unimpressed with Diamond and Pearl. The only thing that saved it was Heart Gold, because that game is a fucking masterpiece.
Best in the series.
Yeah. Handedly. But yeah, it's just they're trying to spin the series into a more, like, maybe even at this point, dated RPG format, and it doesn't mesh with what I personally get out of Pokemon, or what I want to get out of Pokemon. If I want to play a big RPG, I'm going to play, like, a Final Fantasy, or, like, a Tales game, or something that has been that kind of since the beginning, as opposed to a game that has morphed more into that in a strange and lumpy way.
I guess the last thing that I'll maybe close us out on is that, like, I think the other thing that and I've been talking to Lorraine about this a little bit because I've been thinking about him a bunch, but the way that those, like, I do think that like if you come fresh to those games, especially one like Sword and Shield, which I think has, like, on, like, there's a base coat of competence in terms of how it functions, like, if you come to that game as an 8-year-old who's never played a Pokemon game before, I think you probably will almost certainly receive it more positively than people have been playing them for, like, 20 years or whatever.
For sure.
So there's that.
And that has definitely been a trend in more recent ones, because they have been more beginner-friendly, which also frustrates me as a veteran who have, like, I've done this for, like, almost 30 years now, man.
Right.
Like,
you want it to be getting harder, and instead it's getting easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's,
which,
like,
then sucks the enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, there's no way to, like,
I can't believe there's no hard mode in Pokemon.
The only one there ever was in Black and White. I think it was only in Black, and you had to beat the game first. It was
like New Game Plus, too.
Yeah.
Right?
But not really, because it did erase your file.
Well, yeah. You had to beat the game first, though.
Uh-huh. And then you could get easy mode in White, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I forgot there was an easy mode.
Yeah, there was an easy mode in that gen. Like, what the fuck?
That's wild.
Ugh. Pokemon,
yeah.
Bark.
But yeah, I do think that it's... I think for that game specifically, like, for Sword and Shield, and not even, like, trying to tap into the pantheon of all the other Pokemon games that exist, I do think that that game is, like... like, kind of suffers the most from both, like, this is very, very acceptable, like, this is solid if it's, like, your introduction mm-hmm. to Pokemon video games, but the diminishing returns if you've been around
yeah.
for... you know, a decade or two are
it kind of
stark.
Astounds me that they haven't tried to tap into that older audience at all aside from nostalgia alone. Like, they've
not just Nintendo's MO though.
Yeah, but it's technically the Pokemon company making it and not Nintendo, so there is a bit of a difference in like dev teams. So it is yeah. like a separate group of people at Game Freak mm-hmm. making these games as opposed to any of the Nintendo A&D teams or whatever they're called. Which is one thing, because Game Freak, I believe, is a second party. It's not inside of the Nintendo company as much as, the team making a Legend of Zelda game or
right.
whatever.
My understanding is that they don't necessarily take the same degree of, like, marching orders from
yeah,
Nintendo
they
corporate,
have
but they have
a
controlling stake in their,
yeah,
like, existence, essentially.
They have a little more wiggle room with what they can do with a Pokemon mm-hmm. game, but, like... they've basically, like, because even if, like, the Let's Go game, which I was extremely, like, kind of just turning my nose up at before I actually played it, it seems like even more of that, like, oh, it's baby's first Pokemon game. Like, there's nothing here. It's just fluff. And, like, I had so much more fun with that than their actual game in Sword and Shield because it was so different, because it stripped away all of the bullshit that they've been cramming into the series recently. And, like, the fact that there is nothing for a veteran of the series to play aside from, like, high-level competitive stuff, like, that's kind of all there is. Like, they're not making anything, so you've got to do it on yourself, and that means you have to be playing the new games. They know you're going to do it because that's all there is. Like, they're not going to alienate, like, the newer players because they want everyone, so they just hamstring the older players along. Force you to take part in their content.
Yeah, I don't know.
Feelings.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. And at the same time, you know, it's like you said, it'd be something if they could somehow just like split the difference with like a bunch of discrete settings on that end
yeah.
of like a hard mode or just like some weird shit like that. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to make those products for that like array of audiences, because mm-hmm. that's how I feel about the I think that almost every lesson that Hollywood movies have learned from video games has been like a poor one. Like, because I just don't think that like their mediums are different enough that I don't think there's like a one-to-one ratio of like you can do the things that video games do in like a Hollywood movie setting, because like the
just keep speaking, Dustin.
But maybe some technical difficulties, but anyway, I'm just gonna keep talking.
That's what I told you to do.
But like the thing with those, and Lorraine, here I'll ask you this question, and you can tell me what you think, like how you feel about it. Do you feel like the existence of games like these continued Pokemon games that you're maybe less and less enthused with as they go on, like a Sword and Shield, does that diminish in your mind, like the set the standing in your head that those old games have, like,
no.
In terms of... Okay, because I think I agree with you. Like, I'm pretty sure I'm on the exact same page.
Like, because when they released the original games and then later Gold, Silver, and Crystal on the 3DS eShop,
mm-hmm.
I had so much fun playing those again. Like, they're not a long, extensive thing, so obviously I didn't play them very long, but I finished them for the first time, like, replaying them for the first time in years, and had a great time. And I can look back at my time with, like, and, like, the memories I have of playing those games fresh, of, like, Ruby and Sapphire, technically most of Gen 4, because I was still pretty excited for it, like, when it came out, and
mm-hmm.
enjoyed parts of Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum, and like Black and White, X and Y. Like, I have fond memories of those, and I don't see this as taking away from what I already have,
mm-hmm.
but it's not adding to it. It's stagnant now. Like, there's a distinct line between like what parts of the franchise I like and what parts I don't like, and that cavern is growing as more games come out that fall into that latter category.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause the thing
it's
there,
like, it's like a good plate of pancakes. It's got the perfect amount of pancake and the perfect amount of syrup, and they just keep putting another flapjack on top of the stack, and you're like, no, you guys need to stop. I need the syrup. And they're like, pancake?
But have you considered pancake?
Now you've got like fucking 15 pancakes stacked on top of each other, and like there's a bit of syrup, but it's like somewhere in the middle, like, and that, you know, you're not gonna get to
and
it.
Maybe every once in a while they'll drop one of those tiny like single use syrup containers like next to your plate, which isn't enough for a single pancake at all, but they're like, here's the syrup you wanted. And you're like, but. And they're like, pancake.
Didn't you want pancakes?
Is this a
pancakes?
Metaphor for the in-game content?
Maybe. Because, yeah, I do think that in general, I think that does work in video games more often than not. Like, we've already voiced how we're kind of, like, a little bummed out by the nature of the Mario releases or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think, generally speaking, like, the fact that they can keep releasing, you know, new Mario games, and in some cases re-release those old ones, I think they work in the realm of video games because, like, video games are so beholden to the physical hardware that they exist on, and, like, the basic dynamics of, like, software development. Like, they are, you know, art, entertainment projects, but they are also software, so at some point, like, you have to keep releasing new Pokemon games just to keep the interface sort of in line with what, like, people expect a modern game to look like, you know, in... like 2020 or whatever year
they're coming out in. Like, Sword and Shield had a pretty good interface. It was very minimal, like, and I liked that about it. That was maybe the one thing that was kind of nice about it, the way that they've streamlined parts of the interface in both the Let's Go game and Sword and Shield. Like, it's less cluttered. It still kind of can be very bad in certain aspects, but it's not as bad as some of the older games.
Yeah. Like, but I think within the realm of video games, there's enough practical reasons for that stuff to, like, I think both things can be true. I think that there are practical good reasons to, like, kind of keep making iterations on old things or re-releasing old things in new contexts. And I don't think that the same necessarily applies for Hollywood movies. And with, like, the release of Mulan, that, you know, we haven't watched it, I'm not going to pay $3 to watch that fucking movie, like, before it's out for free on Disney Plus or whatever. But like, I think, like, companies like a Disney have, like, saw a lot of that from the video game space of, like, well, you can put out an old thing on a regular interval, and it will refresh interest in the old thing and generate new revenue. And the more times they've released, like, those live-action animated remakes and stuff, like, it is more and more evident that it's just... that I do feel that way for those films. I think that over time, as I've seen, like, the more of them that I've seen, they have started to more and more diminish the originals, because they're just... they are in no way as good or comparable to their source material. They do just strictly exist to, like, generate more revenue and... And, like, more revenue directly because people will pay money to see them, and more revenue on the long term because then you can put out more t-shirts with a different version of Aladdin on them or whatever. Like, they have the nostalgia reason that video games have, but they don't have the same practical purpose for, like Aladdin, the animated film, functions the same. You can just watch it because there's not interactive element. The hardware is not proprietary in the same way that video games are, like...
But I can't put this VHS of Aladdin that I got back in the 90s in my Blu-ray player, Dustin. What am I to do? There's gotta be a better way.
Yeah, I feel like, like I said, it's, and I think it's interesting. Like I wonder to myself why I feel that way exactly.
Back? Question mark? Oh, Brian's here.
Oh. Maybe.
I think.
I don't know. Anyway.
I have bad news as of about an hour ago. Venture Brothers has been canceled.
Oh.
I'm not even sure if Brian can hear you, but if he can, I'm sure he's very sad. That's kind of a bummer. Okay. I haven't, it's a weird thing to quote cancel.
they were in the middle of writing season 8 and they got canceled.
Man, that sucks. That's really unfortunate. Huh.
Stuff on Cartoon Network is canceled.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Well, that's lame.
Yep. Sorry to bum you out with that.
No, that's cool. Well, I mean,
don't
it's
worry.
Just,
we were already depressed thinking about modern Pokemon games. It's fine.
I bet that show just has died on the altar of like we need to kill something because like the revenue is not quite the same in a COVID world as it was without. So we just got to start.
Right, and frankly, one of the
paying you for how many episodes a year.
I'm sorry, what?
Without them going to one of the major streaming platforms and like really going hard, Venture Brothers is the kind of show that is that caters to a young enough, weird enough audience that probably none of them have cable anymore. So,
I came in at the right time.
Sorry, Brian.
The right time to be sad.
Yeah, I heard about it getting canceled. And I'm pretty disappointed, but I'm also confident that that Hulu might pick them up.
I was gonna say, if any show gets picked up after they're canceled, like that's a really good contender.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean,
seven seasons in 17 years.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say, being under a less they'll probably have more flexibility with their production schedule with a streaming service. Than say with Cartoon Network or another like broadcast network,
mm-hmm. And that's a good any of those things that have a built-in following where like it doesn't necessarily have to be true, but like you can go into a boardroom or like I guess in this day and age like get on a Zoom call or whatever, and you just might be able to convince like one or more higher ups that because there's a really dedicated, really passionate audience for this thing that. You might be able to grab those people on your streaming platform for, at minimum the month that it releases, if not a couple more. Like, I couldn't begin to tell you if that data bears out on shows like that or, like, Infinity Train or whatever. Like, I don't know if there's any correlation between, memberships going up and those things hitting, fresh walled gardens. But you can at least say that to the people who write the checks, and they might believe you. But it's certainly easier, I would think, than like trying to do a fresh pitch, for an unproven thing, I guess.
Right.
These days, so yeah, fingers crossed. But that'd be cool. It's always a damn shame where people don't even get like heads up enough to create an ending for the thing that they've been working on for however many long. Just like give them one more season. Like if you're gonna pull the plug, like let them finish things off, man. Come on.
I don't want to speak to this specific situation because obviously I don't know what happened behind closed doors, but. Looking at this, like, they had time.
Venture Brothers is maybe, I don't, I could.
If you're taking 3 years to even come up with scripts for a season 8.
Yeah, I don't know what their production situation is like, other than, there have been gaps, obviously, but.
At
some point, they should have just been like, all right, if we get canceled this year, here's how we end it. If we get canceled next year, here's how we end it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sucks. That's,
I go
bet,
back 3 years and change last season.
Mm-hmm. I bet that'll be all right. Here's how we'll actually end this, and then we're gonna go play some video games and hopefully be a little less sad.
Let's get more sad. Let's go.
We've inverted the. We're now the Last Jedi podcast. We've inverted your expectations by putting the bummer at the end of the. I do think shit's really about to start to hit the fan in a major way. Economically, like across the board, like it looks like the eviction situation that everybody has known is coming like for months now is really, really starting to heat up, and people are just getting thrown out on their asses.
Yeah,
and it's
There's
horrifying.
A moving mountain here about to collide with a different mountain, and one of them is going to explode.
Yeah.
Let's see which one it is.
So
it's not going to happen today. So
right,
no,
exactly.
I mean mountains don't run into each other overnight.
That's somebody else's problem.
so that's gonna have
at the highest level, it's going to have significant negative consequences for millions of people's lives.
Yeah.
But it's also going to bleed out to every, like, you know.
Yeah, it's going
to... No video game you love is necessarily completely safe. No TV show or movie is going to be necessarily go unaffected. Like, it'll happen at the base level to people's well-being. You heard
about trickle-down economics.
And it'll, like... It'll trickle out. It'll splinter out to some extent, like, every, you know, piece of the American economic, you know...
Shit's fracturing, yo.
Edifice.
Let's go.
In a hypothetical best case scenario next year, like, do they get stimulus back onto the table and kind of get that moving in?
I heard that Mitch McConnell still wants to give everyone $1,200 again. Solve this problem.
Yep, that's it.
You get your check in the mail on November 2nd.
Yep, yeah, exactly. With cartoon Donald Trump's smiling face on it.
And then you have to burn it because...
I have a little doubt that something like that will happen. A Band-Aid?
Yeah, but like that...
A
like
Band-Aid
that,
on like a shotgun that degree, wound.
That degree of a solution wasn't sufficient 2 months ago. it's even less so now. It's still better than nothing, you know, but... But fucking a few months ago,
there was a world where people were like, we could still solve this problem technically, and now it's no, this problem's here.
Yeah.
And it's like it is completely voluntary of the people we have elected to lead us are failing us pretty much intentionally at this point. Just like, you know what?
And spectacularly.
Like, what if we just didn't care?
What
if our constituents are going to suffer and my response to you is, well, that seems difficult. Good luck.
Thoughts and prayers.
I learned a Nintendo lesson that they'll give you your money and vote for you no matter how much or how little you do.
Why care? Everybody, you know, for anybody who has been displaced or is going to be displaced in the near future, I hope that things work out, and I hope that this country becomes more rational over time. Like, I hope we get to a better version of America in the next decade or so.
To reiterate our point from last time, vote, please.
Vote.
Yeah.
Do everything that you physically can or are able to do.
Vote, strike, organize.
Yes.
Like, that's where I'll leave us on this Labor Day that we are, in fact, recording this on.
True.
Hey.
Fuck some shit up, man.
Hell
get out
yeah.
there and protest and let your voice be heard. Do not continue to let people abuse you. It's not right.
No.
And yeah, with that, I think we'll call it a show.
Great.
So we're going to go do something more fun than remember how bad the world is. But
God,
thank you
I
all
hope
for
so.
Joining us. Thank you, Brian, for popping in for just a second to hear that Venture Brothers has been canceled. Literally a pure injection of sadness and nothing else for Brian.
A heart out to Phil, whose headset podcast. Died during the course of this podcast.
Yeah, and with that, we'll get off of here and go do something a little more fun.
Press
so
the red button this time, Dustin.
We'll see you later, Internet. Bye-bye,
bye,
everybody.
Out.
Dude.